Okay, thank you for coming to this last session of the convention. I appreciate it. This session is on best practices for maintaining and updating a SharePoint app. I'm Ricky Kirkham. I'm with the developer documentation team at SharePoint, at Microsoft for SharePoint. Here's a slide that by now you've seen many, many times. It's at all the developer sessions. I'll simply show it one more time to remind you that we have engaging solutions across Office and custom mobile web apps, connected services, and flexible tools. Okay. Now, I have some goodies here for you. Some hacky sacks. You can't get enough hacky sacks, and about 5 t-shirts. I'll tell you what. About a year ago, they changed terminology and said that raising the version of an app is no longer called upgrading. It's now called updating, and it took me months to get into the habit of saying updating. So I'll tell you what. If I inadvertently say upgrade any time, you all call out update, and I'll throw something out. If there's anything left at the end, you can come up and wrestle for it. In fact, I'll tell you what. My colleagues Tony and Lola are here. I'll have them do the tossing. Okay. All right. I won't be taking verbal questions and answers today, partly because I'm just hard of hearing and I wouldn't hear you. But also because we want to encourage you to use our Yammer group, which is called SharePoint Development Track, and go on to Yammer, navigate to that group, join that group, and then on the Files tab, just click for the file with this name that you see there, SPC425, the name of this presentation, and that will be an ongoing discussion on this subject matter for an indefinite period into the future, and that's also where you can put down any questions you have about what I say here, and I'll start monitoring that and answering those questions later today. For those of you who are watching on video, if you hit the pause button, you can literally just copy that URL there into your browser. Okay. Why the heck should you care about updating SharePoint apps? Well, you're going to need to update your app sooner or later, almost certainly, if for no other reasons than at least for these, to fix a bug. Some of you, unlike me, may not write bug-free code, so you may need to fix a bug. Okay? But even I sometimes need to distribute a security update for an app, or simply add functionality. Okay? So that's why you need to update apps. Now, in the past, before we had the app model, we had, as you know, solutions, and inside those solutions, we had features, and they were very rarely updated. We know that because the page hits on our updating documentation was very, very low. So we know many of you weren't ever doing that. Most of you weren't. And there were reasons why. It was easy just to replace a farm or sandbox solution rather than to update it. It was pretty easy to either preserve or migrate data from an old feature to a new feature. Okay. And you had to recycle the farm anyway. Even if you went to the trouble of learning the update semantics and updated your feature, you had to bring down the farm to install that new farm solution anyway, so you didn't gain that much. Okay? So the bottom line was a replace strategy was generally more cost effective before the app model than an update strategy. But that has changed. With apps, updating is more important, especially, but not exclusively, if you are selling the app through the Office Store. Okay? For Office Store apps, developers don't even know who their customers are. So they can't tell them about a replacement app. Okay? So what's needed is a system that alerts users to the existence of an update, and that's what we provide in SharePoint 2013. Okay? Also, for non-store apps, okay, the replace strategy now faces some serious problems compared with the update strategy. Okay? First of all, once again, you still have to preserve or migrate data from the old app to the new, okay? But that's much harder now. Okay? Why? Because you don't have feature receivers. Remember those. Okay? Those few of you who actually did update your features used feature receivers to migrate the data from the old version to the new. You'd use, say, the feature activating feature to go and fetch data from the old feature and bring it into the new one. Okay? But feature receivers are SharePoint server-side code, so you can't use those in the app model. Okay? Also, the new and old web domains, app web domains, are different domains. So there may be authorization issues, okay, in trying to migrate data from one to the other. Okay? And finally, you don't have any real way of ensuring that users don't delete the old app, okay, or uninstall it, okay, before they install the new one, if you're following the replace strategy. And if they do that, of course, then all hope of preserving that data is gone. Okay? And they may do that not realizing what they're doing. Okay, the bottom line is, okay, professional SharePoint developers can't get away with not knowing how to update anymore. So while your competitors are sitting smugly and bored in an airport lounge right now, you are getting a leg up on them because you stayed, and you're going to learn this. Okay, how do you deploy and install an update? Okay. Well, app updates are deployed in an app package, just like a brand new app. But the version number is incremented in the app manifest. The product ID, which is a GUID, stays the same. Okay? Then installation, an indication that an update is available appears on the app tile within 24 hours. Okay? 24 hours of what? Well, within 24 hours of either you have uploaded the new app package to the organization's app catalog, or within 24 hours of your new app package being accepted into the Office Store. Okay? Now, here's what the upgrade experience looks like to the end users. This is the tile of an app on the site contents page, and you'll see there that SharePoint has detected that the app in the app catalog or the store has the same product ID as an installed app, but a higher version number. And when it sees that, it puts this sentence on the app tile: an update for this app is available. And of course, the word update is a link. When the user clicks that, and he gets this details call out. And it's just like the add it button for, or the add it dialog for an app, except that the add it button is grayed out. And below that, you see this new message there, a new version of the app is available. And there's a get it button. And below that, the version of the new version and the release date. Okay? So the user clicks that get it button. And now they get the standard trust it button. You have to retrust the app with each update. And there's a reason why that is. We'll see later. Click trust it. And then they're taken back to the site contents page. And there on their app tile, they get the message saying, we're updating your app. Okay. Now, you as developers, of course, can't wait 24 hours between each iteration of your update semantics or your update logic, right? That would make you really, really inefficient as developers. So there's a fast way that you can update without having to wait 24 hours. Once again, on your test site where you have uploaded the latest version of your app package, your update app package, you go to the app tile and you click the three dots button, the callout button, and that opens a callout with four tabs on it. You click the About tab, and now you see that screen again where you click Get It, and then Trust It, and then your app updates. Okay? And you can do that within seconds of uploading the latest version of your app package to the app catalog. Now, because this update process, even for a small app, takes a few minutes, I can't actually demo updating. We'd sit here just watching that message, "We are updating your app," through most of my talk. So I'm not going to actually demo updating. But I will be showing you sample code and sample markup. Okay? Now, the first version of this talk, when I wrote it last December, was 3.5 hours. And needless to say, I've had to cut out more and more details. I've kept the essence here, I think. But I'm going to have to refer you to our MSDN documentation several times in this talk for details that we simply don't have time to cover today. We greatly expanded our coverage of app updating last June, and you can see there the table of contents as it looks now. It's in the Build Apps for SharePoint section, the Publish subsection, and then all of this looks like about 8 or so topics there. That is all about updating apps for SharePoint. And if you're wondering how much content is there, you can think of it like this. If all of the feature articles in a typical episode of MSDN Magazine were about app updating, and half the regular columnists also devoted their columns to app updating, that's how much content is there on MSDN. Okay. So let's begin with four fundamental facts of SharePoint app updating. Fundamental fact number one, nothing in the SharePoint infrastructure forces users to update. Nothing compels them to click that blue word update on the app tile. In fact, some users may not have sufficient permissions. The user who updates has to have all the permissions that the app itself is going to ask for in order to update, just as he or she does to install the app. And some users may not have all those permissions, so they can't update it. In fact, it may be that the only person who can update it is, say, someone with administration level website owner or site collection admin who rarely actually uses the app and rarely sees that there is an update available message. So the app could stay there with that message for weeks or months and not get updated. So the implication of this fact is this. Not every installed instance of the app is at the previous version. For example, if you've updated your app three times, you updated from 1 to 2, version 2 to 3, version 3 to 4, you usually have to assume that some instances are still at version 1. And some instances are still at version 2, as well as, of course, some at version 3. Fundamental fact number two, there can only be one version of the app in the Office Store or the app catalog, only one app package. The implication of these two facts is your update markup logic cannot assume that the instance that it is updating is the previous version. For that matter, it can't assume that there was any previous version. It might be that the app is now being installed for the first time on the particular website. So that means the same app package has to work in all of the following scenarios: on a brand new clean install, on an update from version 1 to the newest version, an update from version 2 to the newest version, an update from version 3, and so on, for every previous version. Okay? Your update logic and markup has to take into account each of those possibilities. Okay? Fundamental fact number 3, every instance that is updated from a given app package ends up with the same version number. That's the version number that's in the app manifest of that app package. Right? Fundamental fact number 4, update logic, for all practical purposes, can only distinguish different instances of a given app by the version number. Okay? Now, let's put 3 and 4 together. Okay? What are the implications of that? If you mess up, unlike me, who never does, if you mess up the logic of one of your scenarios, okay, it's very hard to fix the messed up app instances with a later update. Okay? For example, okay, let's suppose you update an app from version 1 to 2 and your update adds component X. Okay? And then a few weeks, months later, you update to version 3 and this update adds component Y. And then a few weeks, months later, you update to version 4 and add component Z. Okay? Now your app package for version 4 excuse me, must work. Once again, in all of these cases, it has to work on a clean install. It has to install everything on a clean install, all the original components plus X, Y, and Z. It has to work on an update of version 1 to version 4, okay, which means it has to install components X and Y and Z on instances that are currently at version 1. Okay. Has to work on update of version 2. It has to add components Y and Z. And of course, if the instance is currently at version 3, it has to add component Z. Okay? Now, suppose your update markup or logic is goofed up for the scenario when the current version is 2. Okay? So this is the update that was supposed to add component Y. Okay? Now, what's going to happen if component Y doesn't get installed on those instances? Okay. Some of the app instances that were updated to version 4, remember now, they're all going to be at version 4 when the update process ends. Okay. But some of those app instances are going to be missing component Y. So you'll have all those app instances out there. They all say version 4 on them. They all have the original components. They all have component X. They all have component Z. Some of them don't have component Y. Okay? But they all have version number 4. And remember, fundamental fact number 4, for all practical purposes, the only way SharePoint can distinguish app instances is by version. Okay? So future updates cannot distinguish the instances that are messed up from the instances that aren't. Okay? That is nasty. Okay? So that's why you are all glad you're here and not sitting in the airport. Okay? So this brings me to the twin dangers of SharePoint app updating, the rock and the hard place. Okay? The rock is the problem of installing too little, such as the example I just gave you, in which some component does not get installed on some instances of the app. Okay? That's the rock. Okay? The hard place, that's the problem of installing too much. Okay? That is, your update markup logic or markup installs a component a second time on some instances of the app. For example, a new column is added to a SharePoint list when an app instance is updated from version 1 to 2, but then, by mistake, your mistake, in your code or update logic, an identical column gets added again when the instance is updated from 2 to 3. That's bad, too. That's the hard place. Okay? You want to navigate safely between the rock and the hard place. Okay? And I'm going to tell you how to do it. Okay? First thing you're going to need is lucky 13 best practices that I'm going to tell you about. I've actually had to cut it down to 10. I'll tell you why in a minute. Since this slide deck was created, I had to cut it down to lucky 10 best practices. And the other thing that's going to help you navigate between the rock and the hard place is something that I'm going to call the venerable version logic of SharePoint app updating. All right, let's take a look at the first of those best practices. You want to test your update with each earlier version of the app. This is how you do it. Excuse me. First, install each earlier version on a different subweb of your test site. In other words, you've saved a copy of each version's app package. Upload the package for version 1 to your test site's app catalog and install it on a website. Then upload the package for version 2, install it on a different subweb, and so on for every version. Then you upload the latest version of the app, the one you're working on now, to the app catalog. And then you go through subweb by subweb, and you click that update link on all those tiles, and you update every instance of the app. Okay? And then you want to verify that every single one of those versions has been updated to the latest version number, it has the latest version of all components, and it doesn't have any of them more than once. Okay? Those are the things you want to do. That's best practice one. Best practice two, you have to use Visual Studio. NAPA does not support updating apps. Okay? You don't have access to certain things that you need to. Okay? So you've got to use Visual Studio for updating, even for SharePoint-hosted apps. Now, I want to talk something about the rollback on error system that SharePoint has. I can't tell you everything that's going on under the hood in SharePoint after the user clicks that update link. Okay? But it is in MSDN. There's a whole topic that's basically devoted to each thing that SharePoint is doing under the hood. But one part of the process I do want to talk about is the rollback on error. And what happens is that if there's an error, an exception is thrown, the entire upgrade is rolled back. And I mean the entire upgrade, not just the component whose, doggone it, the entire update is rolled back. Not just the component that threw the error. So if you updated something on the app web and you also added a custom action on the host web, and let's say for laughs it was an auto-hosted app and you updated the schema of the SQL database, and the last of those, let's say, threw an error, it's not just going to roll back that schema update. It's going to roll back everything it did. It's going to roll back your changes to the host web. It's going to roll back your changes to the app web. The entire app update gets rolled back. Okay? Another thing you want to know about this system is app data is preserved. Okay? They're very careful about keeping a backup copy, so if there's a rollback, they can restore the data. Okay? Now, the system is mostly automatic. But as we're going to see towards the very end of my talk today, there is one circumstance in which you, the developer, have to kind of help out the system a little and help the whole rollback on error system work. Okay. And finally, the error will be reported in the SharePoint UI. This is how you can see it. Once again, you start with your app tile. You click that callout button. This time on the callout, you click the details tab. And this gives you a little app details, I guess you could call it a dialogue. And the second half of it, you see down here, is about errors. And the middle row is upgrade errors. And these numbers tell you how many errors there have been. Okay? And those are actually links. Okay? So if the user clicks that number, the install errors number, that will open another callout that will give some details about that error and a correlation ID. Okay, now, developers work. Okay, there are actually only two tasks that are a part of every app update project. Okay? First thing you do is raise the version number in the app manifest file. Do not change the product ID number. Okay? The last thing you do is upload the app package to the store or the organization's app catalog. What do you do in between? Well, that's going to vary depending on what kind of components you have in your app and what your app architecture is. A couple of things that are connected to the app manifest that I'll mention here is you may need to change the app permission request section if the update asks for more permissions than the preceding version did. Okay? Or for that matter, it might actually ask for fewer permissions than the preceding version did. And this, by the way, is the reason why the app has to be retrusted when it's updated, okay? Because the permission request may have changed. The same point applies to the app prerequisites section. You may have to change that. Okay? And that's basically the only kind of changes you'll be making in your app manifest, in the typical case. Okay. All right, so there are five update stories that you need to know about. And there's actually only four now, because I had to cut one. And I'll tell you why in a minute. First story, you need to know how to upgrade the app web components. Update the app web components. Okay. Oh, there goes a T-shirt. And, of course, you need to know how to update the host web components. And between them, that's the whole story for updating a SharePoint-hosted app. You need to know how to update the remote components of the provider-hosted app. Okay? And there's not a lot that can be said about that, given the variances in the platforms, but there's something that can be said about it. And closely connected to that is a kind of sidebar topic that I'll mention briefly called updating without updating. And you'll need to know how to create a handler for the app updated event. Okay? Now, the fifth story was going to be, how do you update the remote parts of the auto-hosted apps, okay, which are in preview? Okay. Well, the final version of these decks was due end of day last Thursday. The next day, the messaging on auto-hosted apps changed. It's still in preview, but they're putting the pre back in preview. It's really preview now. And the current messaging is that they're having some scalability issues and business continuity issues, and they want to rethink auto-hosted apps. So it's going to stay in preview for quite a while, and for now, the message is auto-hosted apps are to be used as a kind of proof of concept tool for you to create very quickly an app that eventually you will reconfigure as a provider-hosted app. But given that its only purpose for the immediate future is proof of concept, well, you're never going to update it. Okay? So there's no point in me telling you now how to update it. So I'm just going to cut that off the end of today's presentation, okay? Even though it's on the slides. Okay, the first of those stories, updating the app web, okay? All of the SharePoint components that are deployed to the app web are contained in a single feature in the app package, okay? For that reason, updating these components is simply a matter of updating that feature. Okay? And that's done by editing the feature XML file for the feature. This has actually been true of features going back at least to the 2007 version of SharePoint. But as I mentioned at the beginning of this talk, we know that almost none of you are doing it. Okay? Well, now you're going to have to. Okay? So, now, unfortunately, as of the last time I looked at them, the tools, the SharePoint developer tools in Visual Studio, the designer of the feature XML file doesn't expose the parts of that file that you need to edit to use your update semantics. So you have to disable that feature and work with the raw XML. And I'm not going to show you how to do that today. You can see the MSDN documentation, and it tells you step by step with screenshots how that's done. So let's just jump ahead, and we'll say we've got our feature XML file open in front of us in Visual Studio now. The first thing you're going to do, increment the feature version number. Okay? And that brings me to best practice number 3. Use the same number that you used for the app. Okay? You'll save yourself lots of debugging headaches and puzzles, okay, by keeping the version number of the app as a whole in sync with each component within the app that has its own version number, including the app web feature. Okay? I'll just save you some tearing of hair. Okay? All right. Okay. Here's the feature XML file. It has 2 sections. Okay? First, there's the element manifest section, and this contains all the original components of the app web feature. It's auto-generated by the Visual Studio tools. Okay? Whenever you in Visual Studio go add new item, and then click, say, SharePoint list or whatever it is, and add something to the feature, under the hood, Visual Studio is writing to this section of the feature manifest file. Okay? This section will only be processed on a clean install. The system is smart enough to know that you don't want the original components installed a second time on an update. So it's only going to process this on an original installation of the app. Okay? The second major section is the upgrade action section. And as you can probably guess, this is where you put your markup for your new and changed components. Okay? Actually, that's actually the term, upgrade actions. See, they're not even consistent. This is processed on both installation and update. Okay? And of course it should be, because when you install for the first time, you want the new instance that's being installed on the website to be version 2. So you want this stuff here in the upgrade actions to happen, as well as the stuff in the element manifest section. Okay. Let's zero in on the upgrade actions section here. Okay? It can have 5 valid child elements. Okay? First of them is custom upgrade actions, but this doesn't really apply because it refers to server-side code on the SharePoint server, which is not applicable to apps, so you can't use it in the context of an app. Okay? Next one is add content type field, just as the name suggests. That's what you would use to add a field to a content type. Okay? Map file is a kind of special purpose thing. It's used to replace a page that end users may have customized. That's the only purpose it has. You won't frequently use that. Okay? And then the workhorse, apply element manifest. This is like kind of a miniaturized version of that first section, the element manifest section. This is where everything that you want to add or change that doesn't apply to the 2 elements above it will go in this section. Okay? And finally, there's a version range element, which is very important, and we'll talk about that in some detail in a minute. Okay. Now, as I say, this system for updating features has been there since the 2007 version of SharePoint. It hasn't changed. You can read the details in MSDN. Okay. Here's an example. Okay. In this particular case, we're updating. We've added an applied elements manifest to the upgrade action section. And all that I'm doing is I'm replacing an old jQuery with a newer version of jQuery. So there's an element file that points to that new file. And then this elements XML is the element manifest, which itemizes that file. Okay. But these sorts of details, we don't want to get bogged down in them. So I'm just going to replace all that with this placeholder and call it new changed components in the update. Excuse me. All right, subsequent updates. Okay. When you update the app a second time from 2 to 3, your app package has to work in three scenarios. Once again, a clean install. It has to work on websites where it was previously installed and was updated to version 2. It also has to work in websites where it was installed but was not ever updated from 1 to 2. Okay? In all of these scenarios, okay, the result of the installation update is that all instances are at version 3. You can't change that. Okay? And they should all be identically configured. That you are responsible for. Okay? Now remember the hard place. The update action should not reoccur on the same app instance. Okay? For example, if you add a field to a content type in the update from version 1 to 2, you do not want that field added again in the next update from 2 to 3. Okay? How do you prevent that? That's where the version range element comes in. Okay? The version range element is, in effect, the conditional block in this part of CAML, in the feature XML. It's the if-then structure. Okay? Here's an example, okay, of how to use the version range. First, as you can see, I've updated the version to version 3. Then we've got the markup that was already in the file, the markup from the previous update. See that? But I've wrapped that in a version range element. Okay? And now we add to that element an end range attribute. Okay? You want the upgrade actions inside this version range to be applied to any instances of the app to which they haven't already been applied. That is, instances that are still back at version 1. Okay? But you don't want them to be reapplied to instances to which they have already been applied, instances that are already at version 2. Okay? Now, the end range value is exclusive. Okay? So you set it to the lowest version to which you do not want the upgrade actions applied. So as you can see there, I've set it to 2. Okay? And I'll just mention as an aside here, I looked up blog posts on updating features, many of them years old, and almost none of them got this right because we on the developer documentation team failed to note that the end range attribute is exclusive. So we apologize to all of those blog writers. It is exclusive. Okay? And finally, below the version range element, you add your new update markup for your current update to version 3. Okay? Now, for each subsequent update, you repeat the pattern. Okay? For example, here, we've raised the version number to version 4. Okay? I've moved the upgrade markup from the previous update to 3 into a version range. added an end range to it, okay, and added the new and changed markup below that. You just keep following that pattern. Okay. That pattern is what I call the venerable version logic of SharePoint app updating. You've just seen it in feature XML markup. You're going to see it again in C# in a little while, and if we still had auto-hosted apps, you would see it in TSQL, but we're going to skip that today. Okay, so here is the venerable version logic in pseudocode. You always have installation logic, of course, the original components of your app, but that always has to be somehow or other inside a conditional block that's only going to run on a new installation. Okay? And below that, you put your upgrade for your first upgrade from version 1, update from version 1 to 2. Okay? I didn't think I'd do it wrong this many times. I should have brought more t-shirts. Okay. Then on the next update, okay, you move that logic into another conditional block, okay, which will only run on versions that are less than 2. And below that, put the logic for the next update. Okay. The next one, follow the same pattern. Okay. So you're always moving the last update logic into a conditional block that tests whether the current version is less than the last version. And then you're always putting the latest update logic at the end. Okay. Let me mention quickly here best practice number 4. If you're poking around in our reference documentation for this upgrade semantics, the version range at element and so on, you're going to see that version range not only has an end range attribute, it also has a begin range attribute. Okay? That's actually a mistake. Okay? And that's another thing that messed up all those blog post writers that I mentioned earlier. Okay? They all thought, well, Microsoft created this begin range attribute, so I guess I'm supposed to use it. Well, sorry about that. Don't ever use it. The only effect it can ever have is bad. The only thing it can ever do is crash you on the rock. Remember, the rock is where something doesn't get installed on some instances. That's the only effect it can ever have. Don't use it. Okay, so much for updating the app web. How about the host web? Okay. There are two ways to update the host web. You can use descriptive markup in a host web feature, or you can use imperative code in the handler for the app updated event, which I'll be talking about later. Okay. Now, first let's talk about the host web feature. There are only two kinds of components that can be descriptively employed, an app part and a custom action. And according to Rob Liefert's keynote last Monday, there will very soon be a third one, a custom file type handler that you can add in there. But as of the time I turned in my deck, there were just those two. Okay. Now, here's the good news. Okay. The host web feature uses hole-for-hole replacement logic. Okay? In other words, SharePoint is going to take your descriptive markup for your app parts, your custom actions, and it's just going to wipe out the old markup from the previous version of your host web and plop down the newest version from your app package in its place. It's just going to replace it hole-for-hole. And for that reason, you don't need any update semantics. Okay? Just add and change as needed your markup for the custom actions and the app parts. Okay? In fact, you actually can't use the update markup in the feature XML because that file isn't even generated by the tools until you package the app. It never shows up the host web feature XML file never shows up in Solution Explorer. Okay? So you never manually edit that. Okay? Now, there is a best practice connected with the host web. When you update an app part, be sure to change the name property of the client web part object. Okay? You need to do this to ensure that the old version of the app part is removed from all pages to which it was added. Okay? Why? I'm just going to refer you to MSDN for why. Basically, the idea is that you'll end up with pages having the old version of the app part and other pages on the very same website having the new version of the app part. Okay? Now, you might be wondering at this point, if this hole-for-hole replacement logic makes things so darned easy, why not use it for every part of app updating? Well, unfortunately, it can only be used when there's no danger of deleting data. Okay? App parts aren't data. Custom actions aren't data. So hole-for-hole replacement logic can be used for those. It can't be for the app web, because the app web probably has lists and document libraries and data on it. Okay? Okay, programmatic updating of the host web. Okay? Any host web components that were installed with a handler for the installation event, okay, should be updated with a handler for the updated event. Okay? That's just a general rule. Okay? And that's all I'm going to say about programmatic updating of the host web. Okay? All right. So much for the host web, the app web, and hence updating SharePoint-hosted apps. Let's look quickly at provider-hosted apps. Okay? First, multi-tenant. Just as installation of remote components in a provider-hosted app is a separate event from the installation of the SharePoint app narrowly construed, so is updating. Okay? You update your provider-hosted remote components on your own, okay, previous to uploading the updated version of the SharePoint app per se, the app package, to the store or the organization's app catalog. Okay? There is one exception to that I'll get to in a minute. Okay. Now, only very general advice can be provided for updating the remote components simply because of the wide differences in platforms and tenancy systems and languages and so on. So really, about the only thing I can say is, use the best update practices of the platform on which the components are hosted. Okay. There is a best practice here, though, connected with multi-tenant provider-hosted apps. Changes to those remote components you make in a provider-hosted app must not break older versions of the SharePoint app narrowly construed. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean. Suppose you have a remote web page that is hosted in an app part, and it has buttons on the page that goes and fetches SharePoint list data. Okay? And now you're going to update this app, okay? And you create an update of the SharePoint app that adds a new list to the app web. And, again, this would be a separate event. You update that web page, your remote hosted web page, with a new button that's going to assess that new list. Okay? Now, users of all versions of the app, including those that have not updated the SharePoint app, okay, immediately see the new web page with that new button on it. But the new button only works if they've updated the SharePoint app narrowly construed, because if they haven't, that new list doesn't exist on their app web. This is how it's possible to break the older version of the SharePoint app narrowly construed by changes you make in the remote components. Okay? So, how do you prevent this? Okay? Well, you use best practice number 7. Pass the app version number as a query parameter on the start page URL in the app manifest or in the app part URL, the SRC attribute of the iframe. Okay? Why do you do that? Excuse me. Because that enables the remote component to behave differently depending on the app instance version. For example, okay, you can hide the UI for instances below a specified version. So in that example I just gave you, okay, if you have that version number on the URL as a query parameter, your remote web page can see that, and it can respond by hiding that new button so that people with the old version of the SharePoint app just won't see that new button. Okay? Here's an example of the tail end of a start page URL, and you can see there we've got our standard tokens. I've simply added a new query parameter that gives the version number. Okay? Nothing mysterious there. Quick side topic here, I'll call updating without updating. What if all the changes are to remote components, and those changes don't have to be reflected in the SharePoint components in any way? Okay? Then don't update the SharePoint app. Okay? Just don't update it. Simply change the remote components, okay, and the new functionality will be available immediately, even to people with the old version of the SharePoint app. I should say current version, since you're not updating the app. For example, okay, suppose you add a button to a remote web application that reads a column from a SharePoint list that the web application did not previously read, but which did already exist on the list. Okay. You don't have to change anything in SharePoint. Just upload the revised web page and the revised code behind or JavaScript, if any, okay, and the new functionality is immediately available to users when they start the app. Okay. So that's what I call updating without updating. Okay. All right. Provider-hosted single-tenant apps, these are not common, but it is possible to have a single-tenant provider-hosted app. If you do, your updating of remote components is done with the updated event handler, which I keep referring to, and I'm eventually going to get to it and tell you about it. Okay? That means it's not a separate event from updating the SharePoint app, as it would be with a multi-tenant provider-hosted app. Okay? So that, in turn, means that best practice number 6 doesn't apply. You can't break the old version of the SharePoint app with the new version of the remote components because the updating of the two is in sync. It's always the same event, the same process. So they can't get out of sync. Okay? So best practice number 6 doesn't apply. Okay? Now, I mentioned earlier that updating multi-tenant provider-hosted apps is a separate event from updating the SharePoint app, narrowly construed, but I said there was an exception. There is an exception. You can supplement the basic updating of a multi-tenant SharePoint, a multi-tenant provider-hosted app with an updated event handler, logic in there. And you can do it, you might want to do it for the following reasons: to provide tenant relative logic, okay, or to provide app instance relative logic, or to provide SharePoint domain relative logic. Okay? So that's the exception where you do a little supplemental updating of the multi-tenant provider hosted app as part of the process of updating the SharePoint app. Okay. All right. Now our fourth story and the last story, this thing I keep referring to, the updated event handler. What is it? Well, it's a remote event receiver, which means code is hosted externally to SharePoint, just like any other remote event receiver. It could be in the cloud, could be on another server on premises, but it's external to SharePoint. Okay. It can do anything an app can do, including assessing SharePoint with the client-side object model or the REST APIs. It can make calls to other web services. It's subject to the same app permissions as the app itself. Okay. It's registered in the app manifest. And it executes at the end of the update process. So when the SharePoint infrastructure has done everything that it's going to do to update the app, the last thing it looks at the app manifest and it looks to see if an updated event handler has been registered. And if it is, it looks at the URL that's there in the app manifest and it executes that handler, your custom code. That's the last thing it does. Okay? What would you use this for? Well, it can provide custom logic. And I've actually already mentioned pretty much all of the examples. Use it to programmatically update host web components. You could update remote databases, say a MySQL database. I mentioned that you could use it to update single-tenant provider-hosted apps. And it can be used for tenant-relative, instance-relative, SharePoint domain-relative logic in multi-tenant provider-hosted app. Any kind of custom updating logic that you want, you can put it in here. Okay? One scenario in which a handler is very useful is when a computed field is added to a remote database. Suppose a city column is added, and its value is computed from an already existing postal code column. Code in the upgraded event handler could iterate through the items in the database and fill in the value for the new city field based on the value of the postal code field and on some external data source that maps postal codes onto cities. Okay? That would be a typical use of an upgraded event handler. Okay? Now, you can see MSDN for how to create the handler and register it in the app manifest. It's literally, I think, two clicks. And what it does is it edits the app manifest and registers the handler, and it creates this file you see on screen there, the app event receiver.svc file, which is going to be either in C# or Visual Basic. Okay? And you'll notice first, okay, in this generated code that the tools generate, excuse me, that SharePoint passes on an SP remote event properties object to the method. Okay? This contains information from SharePoint to the handler, including the previous version of the app, and that's crucial as we're going to see in a few minutes. Okay? And the method returns back to SharePoint another informational object called the SP remote event result object, and that contains, among other things, information on whether or not to cancel the update. And that's going to be important, too, as we're going to see. Okay? Now, here in your updated event handler, okay, venerable version logic applies. Okay? Remember venerable version logic? There has to be installation logic, but it has to be wrapped in a conditional block to ensure that it only runs on a clean installation. And this is what that conditional block will look like in your handler. This is C# version. VB would be pretty much the same. You see that you test for whether or not the event being handled is the app installed event or the app updated event or the app uninstalling event. And if it's the app installed event, as it is in this case, that's where your installation logic goes. So that conditional block there is, in effect, the installed event handler. It's all part of the same file. Okay. Then below that, you have your updated event handler. Okay, and you test for that, again, with a conditional structure. So, of course, your update logic goes in there. Okay. Now, that properties object that you see there, okay, right there. That is simply that object we talked about in the last slide, the SP Remote Event Properties object, that SharePoint is passing to the handler. And as you can see, it has an event type property which identifies which event is being handled. Okay? Now, subsequent updates. Okay? We zero in on our app updated handler. There's where we are. And, of course, our update logic is inside there, as it was before. But now we're updating again. Okay? So now we have to put that logic inside a conditional structure, which will ensure that it won't run a second time on an app version on which it's already run. And as you see there, this is how it's done in C# or Visual Basic. You create a version object, assign it to the number of the previous version, version 2, and then you test for what the previous version is here in that properties object that SharePoint has passed. Okay? And if it's less than 2, okay, then you want that upgrade logic to run. If not, not. And below that, of course, goes your update logic for the next update from 2 to 3. And then when you're ready to upgrade again, you move that into a conditional block. And below that, okay. Sorry. Below that goes your latest update logic. Okay. Best practice number 8. You need to catch all errors in your updated event handler and tell the infrastructure to roll back the update. Why? Because the update infrastructure doesn't know about errors in your updated event handler. Okay? It's running on some external server, external to SharePoint, that you've hosted, and it doesn't know about exceptions that are thrown there. Okay? So your code has to tell the SharePoint infrastructure that there's been an error and that it needs to roll back the update. And it does that by using that object we talked about earlier, the SP Remote Event Result object that's returned by the process event method. It has a status property, and you set that status to cancel and then return it to SharePoint, and that will tell SharePoint, okay, something's gone wrong, I need to roll back this update. Okay? So, zooming in here within the process event method, this is what you need to do. You need try and catch blocks. All of that update logic I showed you earlier goes into the try block. I'll tell you what goes at the top of the catch block in a moment. For now, let's jump ahead and look at the end of the catch block. The result object is the SP remote event result object that the method created earlier. Your code sets an error message for it and then sets its status to cancel with error. When this result object is received by SharePoint, it will see that cancel status and roll back the update. Now, what goes here at the beginning of the catch block? This leads me to best practice number 9. When there's an error in the updated event handler, you not only have to tell SharePoint about it, but your code has to roll back what your update logic did. Okay? Why? Because once again, SharePoint doesn't know what your update code did, so it can't roll it back. So you have to roll it back yourself, and that's what you do in the catch block. Okay? Now, not everything in your upgraded event handler needs to be explicitly reversed inside the handler. For example, the app web is going to be rolled back by the infrastructure anyway, so your code does not have to undo changes made to the app web. Okay? Also, changes made to remote components and auto-hosted app, but that's now irrelevant. Okay? When you do have to roll back, the handler has to reverse changes it's made to the host web, okay, or other components that are external to the app for SharePoint. Now, if you're lucky, you can just use a kind of backup and restore system. In your try block, okay, you can back up all the components that your update logic is going to change, and then in your catch block, restore them to their previous state. Okay? That would be simple, but normally you're not going to be able to do that because many platforms simply don't support that kind of backup restore process, and even if they did, it tends to be a very long process. So for performance reasons, you can't really do that. Okay? I, for example, never found a feasible way of doing that for host web components. Okay? So you will need to roll back some things. Now, common sense prevails, of course. There doesn't usually have to be an undo line of code for every do line in your upgrade logic. For example, if your upgrade code created a table in a MySQL database and then added a row to that table in the very same update, well, you don't have to both delete the row and then delete the table. Just delete the table, of course. Common sense prevails, okay? So you're going to use your catch block for your rollback logic, okay? And here's the bird's eye view, okay, of what it's going to look like when you can't use backup restore strategy. Okay. On subsequent updates, what do you do? Okay. Well, your rollback logic has to take account of the fact that the app instance that's being updated is not necessarily the immediately previous version. If it isn't, there may be two or more blocks of update code that need to be undone. Okay? So you'll need more than one block of rollback code, okay? And you'll need conditional logic to decide which blocks of rollback code need to run. Okay? For example, suppose you're upgrading from version 3 to 4. Of course, you want to roll back the 3 to 4 upgrade logic, okay? Since you know that ran. But what if the instance had never been updated to version 3? Then the block of code that updates from 2 to 3 also ran in this update. So it also has to be rolled back. So you need to roll it back in the catch block. Here's what it would look like. Okay? You test for the version, okay? And your rollback of the 2 to 3 update goes in there. Okay? And in case the instance had never been updated to version 2, there's still another block of code, of update code that ran, that you now need to roll back. Okay? So again, you need another conditional block. Okay? I call that the reliable rollback logic because I like alliteration. Okay? Now, as you've noticed, probably, the rollback version tests are in reverse order. You start with the highest number and then test for the next and the next. There's a reason for that, but I'm going to refer you to the MSDN documentation for why you do the rollback logic in reverse order from the venerable version logic. Okay? Our last best practice for today. If you add a component to an app in an upgraded event handler, be sure to add the same code to an installed event handler. Okay. Why? Because there's no time when both the installed event code and the upgraded event code both run. So on a clean installation, only the installed event code runs. Okay. But clean installations result in the same app version number. Okay? The app version that's in the app manifest. Okay? If you don't repeat your update code in the installed event handler, you'll end up with some app instances that have the latest version number, but which actually only have the components of version 1. Okay? So, the good news is that although you have to repeat your update logic, your additive logic in the installed event handler. You don't have to test for version number, because on a clean install, the version of the current instance is, in effect, always zero. Okay? So what you'll do is, there's your installed event handler, okay? And there's your installation logic. And below that, you will copy your update logic from the update handler up here to the installed event handler. And there's no if-then wrapping around it. You don't have to test for version. And then on the next update, just copy that. You just stack each update's logic. And that way, on a clean install, the new app will get all the components all the way up to the latest version. Okay. Now, this is the part that I'm going to skip, auto-hosted. Let me jump all the way to the next to last, or third to last, fourth to last slide. This one, again, you've seen millions of times. It's shown at all our developer track presentations. A call to action. Explore the new APIs. Use Yammer and Stack Overflow and User Voice to connect with us in the community and try out our tools. Okay? And once again, I want to remind you that questions and answers can be addressed to this Yammer group, SharePoint Developer Track. Okay? Go to the Files tab and find the discussion surrounding this slide deck. That's what that file is. Okay? And finally, I'll pause here for the people watching on videotape, can write that down. Okay. And finally, please evaluate my session. Okay? We use that feedback. The evaluation is online this year at your MySPC site. Okay? And you'll see it there. Okay. All righty. And with that, thank you for staying so late.